These are the sounds of war. The place, Vietnam. The province, Quang Ngai. The date, January 31st, 1968.
My name is Carl Williams. I'm a Foreign Service officer with the USAID Department under the Secretary of State. I'm sitting on my lanai watching the VC attack in Quang Ngai. I'm on the second story. I can look down one block away and see where the enemy is trying to get into the province chief's headquarters and capture the province chief. The action is very hot right now. We have our own protection here in the buildings we live in, a private home. We have sandbags and barbed wire. And we expect to defend us. We will be able to defend ourselves.
It all started at 4 o'clock in the morning. The time now is 12:30 in the afternoon. There's been no let up. VC were reported coming into the village, into the province headquarters at Quang Ngai. Last night, the whole town went on 100% alert. All Americans were confined to their compounds. The courts and USAID people were confined to their compounds. The MACV military people took their stations. City expected this. The VC have been trying for 4 months to hit this town, and they've been thwarted by the military. And this morning at 4 o'clock, they started lobbing mortars in. They fought their way into the town and attempted to release the prisoners in the prison cell, but they had no luck because the police moved them out first, took them to the police compound, and after the attack on the prison, took the prisoners back. power plant later in the morning. They went into the hospital. They mortared province headquarters. They mortared the post office. They blew up the filling station that catered to the Americans. Response by the military was immediate and with force. Reports are vague at this time about the activities. However, one report said the heavy VC casualties and light civilian casualties. However, this has to be taken as an early report. There's been no evaluation yet since the fighting has been heavy throughout the day. The VC have been kept mainly on one end of the town, on the west end. They've come in halfway, but they haven't penetrated any further. The sappers got through and into certain areas and placed their satchel charges. Post office has been blown up, and as I said before, filling station. Planes came in early this morning before dawn. One plane circled. Of course, could see nothing. Flares were up all night, however. Now the hot stuff is coming in. Big planes coming into root them out. This is a persistent enemy. And this is the longest sustained attack this province has ever had.
As I mentioned before, I'm sitting on the lanai or porch of my house on the second story, watching and recording the sounds of this battle. It just crossed my mind as to what I'm doing here. A middle-aged retired naval officer, a civilian, surrounded by guns and sandbags and barbed wire, watching and waiting to be attacked by the Viet Cong, who are presently trying to capture the province chief and the rest of the village. Well, I'm part of an advisory team, team number 77, consisting of about 200 military types called MACV, and 10 or 12 of us civilians who were part of USAID, or the Agency for International Development, which comes under the State Department. Advisory teams are sent into provinces to assist both the military and civilian officials in combating the communistic Viet Cong, who were left in South Vietnam by Ho Chi Minh, when in the Versailles Treaty of 1952 they divided Vietnam into North and South, and Ho Chi Minh agreed to take the communists north, and those who didn't want to be communists could remain or be taken from the north to the south. In the 1950s and early 60s, the U.S. Navy helped transport many Vietnamese from Hanoi, the capital of the north, to Saigon, the capital of the south. The South, or the Delta area, was considered the food basket of Vietnam. The North is considered the industrial area, and the South the agricultural area. The attitudes of the people are somewhat similar to the U.S. division of the North and South during the Civil War. The civilians on this team work with opposite numbers of Vietnamese officials in their various categories. For example, I'm a refugee officer and work with the Vietnamese civil service type, who might be called a welfare officer. Other civilians on the team are professionals who work in police, education, as city managers, with the agriculture and other departments. Working with their Vietnamese civilian counterparts. There are 144 provinces in South Vietnam, so there's quite a few of us in this country. Some 1,200 are in USAID alone. Most of us are experienced in their field of endeavor and are picked for their ability to produce under somewhat difficult circumstances, like a guerrilla war, and still stay in one piece. For example, I spent 30 years with the government. 21 years have been overseas in places like China, Japan, Guam, Philippines, and Pearl Harbor. I've been in 3 wars and several skirmishes, mostly as a spectator, but I was in China in the 30s, when the Japanese were taking on the Chinese. I was in Pearl Harbor on a ship when the Japanese attacked. And I was in Japan when we were fighting in Korea. And now here I am in Quan Nai, Vietnam, sitting on a porch. So I guess that might explain why I'm here.
Afternoon.
So much for me. Now let's get along with the war.
That's 2 rockets. Hear the guy, hear him as he makes his turn, the guy hitting him with a machine gun. When he makes his turn, the guy on the machine gun goes after him. The guy. Makes his turn with a machine gun. And report on that firing is that VC has some hostages in a holdup in a house, and they're trying to root them out. Report just came in that there were 500 VC killed. There was only 700 supposed to come in. We'll see how exaggerated this report is when the truth comes out at Quan Nai. You won't believe this, but that firing you see is a half a block down the street. And little Vietnamese kids, 10 years, are walking toward it to see what's going on. Been around for several hours. The little planes going over are observation. Helicopters that are gunships are flying over, taking off from MACV compound. There was a report this morning that two voluntary services people were injured. Nothing has been verified. We sit in our second story here in this unit called 6. The sun is shining very bright at noon, at 2 o'clock rather. There's a breeze blowing. Helicopters are coming over very low. They're gunships. There's a breeze blowing, as I said. It's about 75 or 80 degrees. Those are mortars, you hear? Hear the mortar come out of its pipe with a whoosh. And then he hits about a half a block from us. They're still trying to dig somebody out of a hole. Corner with his machine gun. He's having a ball. Nobody seems to be shooting at him, but he's doing some steady shooting. This is the time of Tet. And it's a time when the Vietnamese people try to go back to their homes for a visit, annual visit. No matter where they're from, they try to get back home. This may have been one of the reasons that the Vietnamese, or the VC, decided to hit us, because it's a good opportunity for them to hit while a lot of the soldiers may be off on leave. But from the sound of those guns, some of them are still around, because those are friendlies. They're on our side. Nobody will believe that I'm sitting on a veranda in the sun with my tape recorder recording the sounds of war. They're playing for keeps. This is not a movie background scene. Michel de Real. The people who are getting hit are real. This morning, about 5:30 or 6, they knocked out the power plant after several hours of bombardment. We had lights all during the initial attack. Some wiseacre said they left the lights on for 2 or 3 hours so they could see what they were doing. Fortunately, when the power plant was knocked out, we had our generator, which went off and kept our electrical supply system going, which gave us communication with other activities around on our network. They're bringing in a loudspeaker now, and the speaker is warning the people to stay off the streets. Those little kids going up to watch this hot battle probably give them the idea that they'd better warn the people. And the word is that the VC are in here and they as I told you before, they hit about 6 o'clock or 4 o'clock this morning. And daylight caught them, they were in the heat of battle and they've just holed up, indicating that they'll probably continue on through the night. And also indicating that we'll have to stay on our feet and stay awake as we've been now for about 10 hours. The civilians are not too adept at war. However, all of us have our guns, ammunition. We know enough to keep out of sight. The only thing we're interested in is keeping some VC from sapping us with a plastic charge. Mortars and shells, we're well enough protected from in the building. But the plastic charge is a terrific blast. We're safe enough from that also, if we can just hold them outside the compound. Colonel Grubaugh and some of the boys went up to the compound, got some sea rations, so we'll have something to eat during this siege. We've got coffee, we're well protected. We've got, we'll see how we make out. People are a little more frightened than they were. I think they now realize that this is for keeps. And I think that they're probably stay off the street. However, here's two young kids going down the street without a care in the world, holding something that looks like a part of a machine gun belt with shells in it. The Buddhist temple across the street from us has been active all morning since about 6 o'clock. We heard the monks in this morning real early, about 5 o'clock, hitting their gong and going about their prayers in the midst of the heat and battle. And they opened up at 6:30, opened the gates, their doors, and they've been open all day. Every once in a while you'll hear them hit the gong, and they wouldn't bongs that indicate they're praying or calling to Buddha in prayer. Now is coming from down near the hospital area. It's about 6 blocks from us. They must have rooted this fellow out here in the corner, but they're having a hard time down by the hospital. They're using a what sounds like a Gatling gun and mortars. Here come more refugees carrying their possessions, bedrolls, not too much possession, a few clothes, something they can carry in their arms. One fellow looks like he's got a tiger, a child's toy. No, I guess it's the color of a blanket. Now they're standing in groups, in a group right across the street from us, talking. They don't seem to be worried, but they are looking back down the street. I'd like to know what the refugees are telling them what that has happened. They know more about this thing than we do. We're in a peculiar situation here on this street, this one block. It has nothing but military intelligence, the GVN intelligence, the military, and we're the province senior advisor in his house, and we're an ideal target, except right across the street is a Buddhist temple. Whether this temple protects us or whether it's be a hideout for VC is a matter of question. But the VC could get in there and they could lob grenades at us all night long. There goes two coolies carrying a man on a stretcher, covered with a blanket, going toward the sound of battle, with a military man walking behind them. Must be a wounded soldier going to the medics. Hangs onto that machine gun like he's got all the ammunition in the world.
3:30 in the afternoon. This has been going on 11 hours and a half. This is a long battle. I have to get some sleep. We got a long night ahead of us. So I think I'll turn in for a minute. Sounds a little bit like they're have been working on the MACV compound, which is the east of us, and they're still digging these people out the south of us, and of course the air base is out to the west. Now if they've knocked off the bridge that's the north of us, they've got us surrounded, and we'll have an exciting time tonight. Could be that they might should order some assistance in here if they could get them in from Chulai, the AmeriCal division. They better get them in here in daylight. If they've blown this bridge to the north, though, that's on Highway 1, and we might not be able to get assistance in unless they bring them in helicopters, and I don't see any big transport helicopters flying around today. But, there goes some big mortars, U.S. types. They shoot them in close, so they must be up close to the compound. There goes that large Gatlin's gun sound up on this other end, up by the compound now. There's one little airplane flying around over here doing a lot of spotting. Looks like there's four or five helicopters, black cats out, I don't know whether they can get into their heliopad or not, but this activity sounds like it's right up here in the McPhee compound, about two blocks to our east. Well, it's a little after 4 o'clock. We've been at this game 12 hours now. A couple of helicopter gunboats coming in, circling over real low, trying to draw some fire so they can find somebody to shoot at. These guys are loaded for bear. They've got guns down on their landing gear. They've got a big shark's face painted on the front of it. It's nice to see them. Trouble down this low. But the sun will be down in another hour and a half. We won't have them with us. Noise you just heard was a rocket. There's your gunships. Hear that racket? That noise, it sounds like a buzzsaw, is that gunship turning loose all his machine guns. That ship's got a lot of firepower. I'd hate to be in front of that thing. Gunship, they got another name for it.
My God, what a fantastic ship. 6,000 rounds a minute, he says. Here he comes again. Gunships are, I've got a big shark's mouth painted on their nose. And boy, they look like a killer shark. Here he comes in again, a little deeper this time. No, he's back to the tree, I guess. He makes his turn, the guy on the machine gun goes after him. The guy on the machine gun in the left. Those two gunships seem to have slowed down all the firing. There's no more firing now up around the MACV compound. I don't hear any more here, this half block away from us where the gunships hit. And I don't hear any down toward the airport. The sun has got about, I guess till 6 o'clock, and it's 4:45 now, 45 minutes before it goes down. So I'll knock off this tape now. And I never did get that sleep. I guess I better get a little sleep while I'm thinking about it. Is the following day, February the 1st, and in the evening of the 1st of February, during the day, the fighting has still been going on, but the VC have pulled back to the south part of town, and I would like to make here some statements that are more a fact than some of the rumors that came in yesterday while the firing was going on and while this tape was being made. The first report we had that VC was coming in was the night before on the 30th, said there were 700 coming in, and that they had they were coming in to stay, and so we knew they'd hit the prison, which they did, but we thought there were 1,300 prisoners in there. There were only about 400, and they'd let a lot go for Tet, so they had about half the prisoners there, and there was about 200. When they when the attack started, they took the prisoners out quickly and took them to a police compound some distance away, put barbed wire around them and held them. And the VC then went into a small village next to the prison and then into the prison itself. But before going into the small village, they mortared that village and set it afire and killed many, many people. Then when they got into the prison, they were going to release BC prisoners. They thought there wasn't as many in there as they thought there was. And they were all gone. So they turned the artillery on them, and they killed 40 BC in there. And during all the operation, I think there were only 12 prisoners that got killed. But the village that these VC had destroyed before was the most terrible scene I'd seen. They came in after mortaring it, they came in and burned it down altogether. It was a village that held Arvin troops and their families, and they did it deliberately, and it was brutal. I have some pictures of this taken. Today they had taken away all the dead Arvin and other prisoners and left just the VC there. And there was VC all over the place, dead. Then another rumor that I'd heard was that the bridge might have been blown out north. Well, it hasn't really, to my knowledge. But these VC did go from in the south part of town, and they're scattered out along the south part of town in some hamlets and villages, in trees, and in some sugarcane fields. Now there's apparently a lot more than we thought there were. We think, now I heard a report that there's two battalions and some remnants of other companies. So there should be something like 900 or 1,000 people in here. The rumor is they're going to stay for 5 days, and or they're going to stay, period. The fighting has died down this evening. It started real hot there. It's about 9:30 now, and we expect it to go along. We expect sappers to come in and work over the village in twos and threes, but many of the refugees, many people have started moving away from where the VC are, and they've come across onto the north side of the street, which is the side we're on, and the north side of north part of town. So we'll see what the night may bring. We're still undergoing the siege. Sporadic fire now. I haven't heard any heavy stuff going for some time, and it might be the calm before the storm, but as this tape is running out, we'll not cut any here. We'll wait till we see what comes later. Maybe this will be the end of the tape. February the 1st.
1968. Call it a day, and I'll get back to you later to fill you in on some more recent news of how things turned out. As a sort of epilogue to this little drama, I'll add some things not known during the action. We didn't know that the whole of South Vietnam was being attacked. We thought it was only our province that was under siege because the VC were very active in our vicinity, and we were mortared three or four times a week, and sappers were continually trying to penetrate our perimeter. Occasionally they got in and did some damage, but it was mostly hit and run. It was later discovered that the Tet Offensive was a disaster to the VC. Ho Chi Minh miscalculated the American ability to hang in there. He'd been listening to the propaganda Jane Fonda and others were spreading in the U.S., and he thought the American public was ready to give up. Maybe the public was, but the people in the field was not. It took four more years of non-support from the American public before it became a lost cause. The good things USA did in Vietnam were never publicized. For example, as a refugee officer in Quang Nai, I had 180,000 refugees in 85 refugee camps scattered among 13 districts. The population of the province was 800,000, so we took care of about a fourth of the people. They were housed, fed, and protected in safe areas. And this was only in one province. After 2 years as a refugee officer, I was made the administrator of the advisory teams and transferred to the Delta. And finally, I was sent to Canto in the headquarters in the Delta and was given 14 districts to administer to the teams there. I came home in 1973 after the shooting stopped and the American prisoners were released. When I got home and found some of our anchormen and leaders discussing the catastrophe we'd got into, I wished that they hadn't talked to the American public like they did. In this USAID capacity, it was more of the caring for the people, not so much war and destruction. And very seldom people hear about what USAID did in that conflict. And I was very disappointed to know that none of the good things that we had done were distributed to or talked to by these anchormen and the people who were against the Vietnamese war. Of course, it wasn't much problem for me to come home, but as it was for the soldiers who'd done the fighting and were in uniform, they were looked on with disdain and they're given some bad treatment for all the things that they did in the interest of their government and their country. We all know now that Vietnam wasn't the place we should have been in, but as we were in it, as American people, we should have been together supporting it like we did in World War II. It's too bad that things turned out as it was. We lost a lot of men and they lost a lot of people, and we didn't do what we set out to do, but we were fighting communism, and I think all of us who were involved kept that in our minds as we struggled to do the things we were told to do.